So I'm going to share, I'd like to share a thought tonight by Rabbi Sacks. I actually have a video that I'm going to share probably on WhatsApp afterwards, because I don't think anybody has to watch like a 3-minute video like this on Zoom. You could definitely watch it on your own time, but I think it's pretty amazing how he finds a point in nature that really drives the point home, which seems completely unrelated. So Parshas Kedoshim has a lot of mitzvos. I think it has the most mitzvos in the Torah. Maybe Kitetze has more. I don't remember. But there's a lot of mitzvos in Kedoshim. And probably if someone wanted, they could spend a lot of time trying to figure out what the connection between all the mitzvos are. Because if you read through the Parsha, not even carefully, quickly, you'll see that like it just jumps around. And just in these 4 psukim that we're going to learn tonight, 4 psukim that we're going to learn tonight, there's so many different mitzvos, and there's not necessarily like a flow that goes from one to the other. So while we're not going to try to be adventurous enough to figure out what the connection is between all 4 of these psukim, we are going to try to figure out what the connection is in Pasuk Yud Zayin between the multiple mitzvos there. So anyway, if you wanted to have a lot of fun, you can probably, you know, spend a lot of time this weekend trying to figure out what the connection is. But the pasuk starts, "Lo tasu avil b'mishpat." You can't commit injustice in the law. "Lo tisa pnei dal." You can't favor the poor person. And you can't favor the rich person. So judgment has to be done with righteousness. So Rashi points out that what does it mean? So if you have, the richest man, which is really amazing how far we've come, like in the 15 years we've been learning. When we learned this pasuk the first time, it was always Bill Gates, but now, Nebuch, he's no longer the richest man in the world. Fill in the blank with what Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, whoever like the flavor of the day will be. If he's going up in court against some homeless guy, so you might be like, listen, how are you going to, like, you're talking $1,000 between the two of them. How could you possibly rule against the poor person, right? Like Elon Musk, $1,000, it wouldn't be worth his time to bend down to pick it up. So that would be lo tisa pnei dal. But on the other hand, you might be like, ugh, do you know what an embarrassment it would be to Elon Musk to lose to like some poor guy in court? So we'll favor the rich guy, and then afterwards, we'll come over to the rich guy and be like, listen, we did this to have you save face, but really, you owe the guy $1,000. Pay it. So the Torah is telling us, "Pesedek tishpot amitecha," that when you meet in injustice, you have to be blind to people's finances, and you have to look at it and say, like, whatever justice is, whatever righteousness is, that's what governs your decisions. Lo teilech rachil b'amecha, so you can't go spreading slander amongst your friends. Rachil is like a peddler. So Rashi says, don't be like a peddler that goes from place to place to place. That's the general way of gossip, is that people have like a really juicy piece of gossip and they desperately want to go and speak to, a person, be like, oh, look, I have this, I want to share this with you. You cannot stand on the blood of your friend, ani Hashem. Okay, so Pasuk Yud Zayin, this is our big pasuk. Lo tisnas achicha b'levavecha, don't hate your friend in your heart. Hocheach tochiach et amitecha, you need to rebuke your friend. Velo tisa alav chet, and you cannot, and you won't carry a sin. Okay, we'll come back to this pasuk in a second. You cannot have nekama or netira, so you can't bear a grudge. I want to borrow something from you. You say no. Then a week later, you come to borrow something from me. I say, I'm not lending it to you because you didn't lend it to me last week. That's nekama. Netira is the same thing, right? I ask to borrow something, you say no. The next week you ask to borrow something from me, and I'm like, you know what, I'll lend it to you because I'm a better person than you are. So that's netira. And then, of course, the paragraph ends with I am Hashem. Okay, so it's a lot of mitzvos in just four psukim. The question is, Pasuk Yud Zayin. How does Pasuk Yud Zayin connect? So anybody want to try to take a shot at it? How do we get from the beginning of Lo Tisnas Achicha Bilvavecha to Lo Tisa Lav Chait?
Within that pasuk,
yeah. Meaning, what's the connection between the? There's three mitzvos there. Right? Don't hate your friend in your heart, your brother in your heart. Give tochacha, and don't carry the sin. So, how do those three things connect?
I don't know, because you understand the third part anyway.
But... I hear you. I'm not exactly sure what the mitzvah is. I mean, we'll see the. See the Ramban in just a few minutes, and hopefully we'll have a little bit more clarity.
I mean, the first two parts seem to be, if you're careful how you're giving tochacha or what your motivation is.
Meaning,
like if you're doing because you don't like him, that's one thing.
Got it. Okay, fine. And then I guess if that's the case, Lotis Alav Chait could be if you do it right, then you won't have a sin. Okay, fair. Anybody else?
That's not a mitzvah. That's not a mitzvah. That's a result, you're saying.
Right, could be.
Well, is it counted in the sphere of mitzvah counting as a?
So I'm not sure. It seems. Yeah, it seems like according to Rabbi Sachs, there might be some machlokas between the Ramban and the Rambam here in terms of whether it's counted even on Hocheach Tochiach, whether it's considered a mitzvah or not. But I could be misunderstanding. I have not seen the Rambam or the Ramban's Sefer Mitzvos inside. You'd have to pull out one of those fancy Mikros Gedolos or one of the art scrolls and see, whether it's listed and who it's listed according to. So I guess that's the first question. The first question is, what's the connection between all the mitzvos? Another question is, Hocheach Tochiach, why is it doubled, right? Just say Hocheach Et Amitecha or Tochiach Et Amitecha. Why do we have both of them? That's the second one. And the third question that we could ask on the idea of Hocheach Tochiach, which is really going to be the focus of what we're going to learn, is when we say the words Hocheach Tochiach Et Amitecha, like, what are the parameters for giving tochacha? When do we have to give tochacha? How does it work? Am I supposed to give tochacha to everyone? Is it just if someone does something personally that's an affront to me that I have to do to give them tochacha? Am I really supposed to give tochacha to everyone? There are people, I'm sure you might have met them once or twice in life, that like feel it's their life mission to give tochacha to everyone. It's funny. I haven't seen the person in a really, really long time, but I do remember once. It was like I don't know what exactly the circumstances were, but someone came over to me in shul and started like really giving me a hard time. He's like, "What you did yesterday at blah 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 place was really, really, really wrong." And I'm like thinking to myself, and like this person, like I knew was like a real zealot to share that kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, can you tell me what I did? Because I have no idea what you're talking about. And he starts giving me details of where and when and what. And I was like, I wasn't at that minyan yesterday. Like I was at a different minyan. And the guy looks at me like, he's like, "Are you sure?" Like, I think the question really should be, "Are you sure?" But I think there are some people, like, they just feel it's like their life mission to give tochacha. So are we really supposed to give tochacha to everyone? We'll see in a sec. Okay, so let's take a look at the Ramban. The Ramban says, Lo tisnat achicha b'lovavecha, bavur shederech hasonim l'chasod et sinatam b'libam. Kemo shamar, b'svatav yinaker, sone hizkir, hakatuv b'hoveh. So, he says, Lo tisnat achicha b'lovavecha. So I think the Ramban might be addressing why the tense of the pasuk, the fact that it's... I think that's his pasuk in Mishlei that he's addressing that on. But he says in general, the way of people is that they cover up their hatred, right? My boss here in Israel likes to point out that the difference between Americans and Israelis is that if an Israeli doesn't like you, he tells you. And if an Israeli doesn't like your opinion, he tells you. And in America, an American, what do? We package everything. Well, please understand, blah, 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 blah. So when we have a debate in the office, I'm trained after 20 years of working in a school that you don't tell someone exactly, I think it's a good idea, but, and then you explain why you don't like it. It's can you just stop wasting my time? Just tell me it's a bad idea and we'll move on. So the Ramban is saying that it is the natural way of people is that if they don't like you, they hate you in their heart, but they don't say anything about it. So he's saying that if you see something that bothers you, don't hate the person in your heart, but rather, so what are you supposed to do? If you see someone doing something that you don't like or that bothers you or that's against you, right? Someone does something that's against you, so you should not hate them in their heart. Hocheach tocheach, tell them off, and by doing that, if you don't give a person tochecha, it is actually an aveira. But if you give them tochecha, so now they won't sin anymore. You won't be upset, and you will not have sinned. So the Ramban seems to make out that the idea of hocheach tocheach is it's personal. If someone wrongs you, don't allow it to bottle up inside you. Right? It's a good psychological principle. Express your concerns, and hopefully it will be better. So Rabbi Sacks points out that it's cathartic. We'll feel better from it. But I think that the core message of the Ramban is that if someone does something bad to you, don't let it eat up inside you, but tell them off. And by telling them off, you'll feel better, but also you'll have given them tochecha. So it doesn't mean that if someone does something that you don't like, right? They're wearing a blue suit instead of a black suit and it bothers you, you have a right to give them tochecha. But if they do something to wrong you in the realm of mitzvos, you have a mitzvah to tell them off. You'll feel better, they'll do better, it'll all be better. That's the Ramban's opinion. So Rabbi Sacks offers a different explanation. I'm not sure whose opinion it is, but we have a notion in the Torah of Kol Yisrael Reivim Zeh B'Zeh, that we're all responsible for each other. So when a Jew sins, you can't look at him and say, oh, now again, this is not personal. He didn't sin against you. I don't know, your neighbor, I don't know, I can't think of something that he's done. I don't know, this once happened to me. Someone, there's a lot of roofs, high roofs around my house. You can see my sukkah from multiple places on the block. So this way nobody will know which neighbor it is. One of my neighbors came to me and said, I think the way your schach is, with big 2x4s on top of it, it's, you're not yotze the mitzvah of sukkah. You should just know that. So he was hocheach tocheach. Why? It doesn't make a difference to him. My sukkah being kosher or not kosher has no impact on him. But it's through the mitzvah of Arevus, right? He's concerned about me. So what happens? Through the notion of Arevus, you have an achrayus to, say something if you see something that someone is doing wrong. So rather than looking at the person and judging him and hating him, he's a sinner, he doesn't come to shul, he's a sinner, he doesn't give tzedakah, whatever it is, you see something, you say something, and that's hocheach tocheach, and lo tisa alav chet. And you could end the pasuk the same way the Ramban would say that by giving him tochecha, what you're essentially doing is you're preventing him from you're preventing yourself from getting credit for the sin by not telling him off. Okay, so it's two different ways to look at the notion of tochecha. The Gemara in Baba Metzia has an interesting drasha, which answers, what is the connection? Why is it written Balashon Kaful? Why is it doubled? So the Gemara says, Amar Lahumer Mid Rabban L'Rava, V'Eima Hocheach Chada Zimna, Tochiach Trei Zimni. Why do we need two times? What isn't one enough? So Amar Lahumer Hocheach Afilu Kuf Pamim. So why is it written in plural? It's written in plural to say to us that even if you have to tell the person 100 times that he's doing something wrong, so you have to. I feel like that's like the parenting model of Tochacha, right? There's like the friend or acquaintance model, there's the teacher model, and there's the parent model. So like as a friend, maybe you see your friend sinning, you tell them off once, you feel good about yourself, I tried to make them a better person. After that, if they don't get it, you're like, forget it, I did my part, check. Then there's like the teacher model, where like, you know, you'll do it a few times, but teachers at a certain point in time will give up and be like, this kid just cannot fill in the blank and it's not worth my time. And then there's the parent model where it's like, I can't believe I'm telling you this for the 100th time, but please don't do whatever it is. Okay, so that is why it is multiple times. So the Gemara then also says, but wait a second, Tochiach ein li ela harav l'talmid, Talmid l'Rav Minayin. If it just had said Tochiach, I would know that a teacher has to tell off a student when they do something wrong. Talmid l'Rav Minayin. How do we know that a student is also allowed to tell off their teacher? Talmid omer Hochiach Tochiach mikol makom. I think it's an amazing thing that when the Gemara was written, there was a thought that a teacher would never be told off by their student. Like, that is something remarkable.
Wishful thinking.
Right. I think it is possible that 2,000 years ago, that was an educational norm. At least on most of the planet nowadays, that is no longer the case. In fact, I think it is more common for a student to tell off a teacher than a teacher to tell off a student.
Yeah, but you're, I think, applying the current terminology of tell off to what the Gemara is talking about. The Gemara is talking about literal lishma, you know, doing the right thing. If you see your Rebbe doing something that might not be right, then you would tell him appropriately and respectfully, as opposed to telling your teacher off today. And I don't,
right.
I'm guessing it's...
Yeah, so I'm not going to be melamed schos on the students quite so much. But yeah, like it's
students.
Right, I think it's funny.
Not Rebbe Akiva students.
I think it's funny when students... it's like more of like, I don't know, Malki's experience is more than I have. Like, you teach the students that you're not allowed to correct the teacher, but if you correct the teacher, you correct them by saying, I know you said this, but maybe you mean this. So she's like, when a student says that with a big snarky smile on their face, like it's completely, completely lost. But right, yes, it's supposed to be coming from a good place. And that is not necessarily what's happening with students. But yeah. So the Shittim Kubetzet actually has an interesting read on this Gemara. It was the only Meforish I was able to find on Sefaria on this line. So he says, "Afil Talmud l'Rav, Perish Vu Shemochicho Belashon Limatanu Rabbeinu Kach." So right, not so much with the way it's done nowadays, but he says to his teacher, "Hey, didn't you teach us X, Y, and Z, and now you're saying, you know, A, B, and C?" I think that the takeaway from the Shita Mekubetzes is that you're permitted to correct your teacher, but it has to be done with grace in a way that that's polite. And I think there is certainly like psychological truth to this, that when someone corrects you by saying, I know you said this, but a different time you seem to have said something else, I think our defenses don't go up quite as much. And then we're like a little bit more inclined to be receptive of this. But when a person says, no, you're wrong, so then all of a sudden we can find 100 reasons why we're not wrong, even if we know that we're wrong. So the novelty, I think, of what is going on here is that we're being told that a Talmud is allowed to correct or is supposed to correct his teacher. Rabbi Sacks, in his book, so he's got a lot of different versions of his stuff, but one of them that I really enjoy that I don't end up using all that often is Lessons in Leadership. He only has one on every parsha, so like, you know, if it's been used or it doesn't work, like, you have to pull another book off the shelf. But last night, that was the one I pulled off. So, or yesterday morning, rather. So he says that most of the book, until Kedoshim, he's discussed, like, the book is all about the essential like ingredients in like in good leadership. So he says, like, this is the first time in his book where he addresses something that he calls not leadership but followership, right? As followers of a leader, what are our responsibilities? So he said, of course, we have to respect the rebbeim, our leaders, our teachers. The Mishnah Avo says, "Himora Rabcha, Kimora Shamayim," that we have to, you know, feel that our rebbeim are the same way we fear God. We have to fear our rebbeim. So that is, on the one hand, yet we're allowed to challenge the leader, and that's like something completely normal in Tanakh. I can't really think of any times where a leader challenges the people.
Sure, Moshe did it 100 times.
We're talking about who Moshe is the leader. So who's?
Yes.
Oh, you're saying Moshe was challenged. Okay, sorry. Yeah, for sure. Right. So Moshe is challenged often. Anybody else that we know in Tanakh that gets challenged as the leader?
Shaul was by Shmuel. I mean, there's a lot of...
Excellent. So, right, so Rabbi Sachs points out Shaul is challenged by Shmuel. Eliyahu challenges Achav, the king. All the Nevi'im challenge the respective kings, right? That's all of Sefer, all of Nevi'im Achronim, right? It's almost never that you'll find a person who does not challenge the Navi. You'll never find a Navi that doesn't challenge the king. So even though it might be like not so novel to Tanakh, it's certainly a novelty that Judaism adds, that you are allowed to challenge the king, you're allowed to challenge the leader, and you're allowed to challenge the Navi is allowed to come as a regular person. On some level, he could be a societal nobody, and he's coming and challenging like the aristocracy and the king. So that's that Rabbi Sachs says is the notion of critical followership, and that is the notion that the Torah adds that was really revolutionary to its time, is that leaders are not infallible and they can be challenged by by the people the leaders can be challenged by their followers. Okay, so let's take a look at a story of a leader, probably one of the most amazing places where a leader is challenged by the Navi, is Perek Yud Bet of Pasuk Aleph of Shmuel Bet. This is right after David HaMelech has sinned with Bathsheba, whatever that means. It's a story for a different time. Vayishlach Hashem Natan al David. So Hashem sends Nathan a Navi to David. Vayavo Elav Vayomer Lo Shneim Hashem Hayu Be'ir Echad. There were two people in a city. Echad Asher Ve'Echad Rash. You have a rich man and a poor man. The rich man had lots and lots of sheep and lots of cattle. The poor guy, all he had was one little sheep that he bought. And this animal was like a member of his family. It grew up in his house. He fed him from his own plate. Gave him to drink from his own cup. He slept in his own bed, and he was like a daughter to him. Seems like the rich guy had a guest, and he just couldn't justify using his own sheep from his own flock. So he takes this one, and he gives it to someone who comes to him. So David hears this case. David is the decisor of law for the Jewish people. Hears this case, and he's incensed. How could it be? And he says, "I swear by God that this man is deserving of death." Now, obviously, the punishment for stealing a sheep is not death, but David HaMelech felt that in this case, you needed more than strict justice. This person had done something that was just so bad. But the kivsai shalim arba time, and he should pay four times. Okay, that makes sense. That is the punishment if you steal. So you pay four times for sheep, five times for a cow. Because of this person lacked basic sensitivity. You are the man. He says, I anointed you as king of the Jewish people and I saved you from Shaul. Just parenthetically, when we learned this, I guess certainly David and Shmuel, when we learned this in Navi back in Shmuel Bet, so I probably at the time wasn't like so attuned to it, because at the time we had probably encountered only one or two stories in the Navi where the Navi comes along and brings like a story to tell his, to get the point across. But when you get to the Nevi'im Achronim, you see that like every single story, like that's how the Navi gets every single thing across, whether it's in Yirmiyahu or in Yechezkel or Yeshaya. Like there's always like some sort of narrative you tell the people, and then you're like, oh, you see, now that you heard this story, I want you to know that this is the take-home message. So
Magid.
Yeah, right. It's the Dubno Magid at, before there was one. Okay, so he's saying that, this is the punishment that you should get. And how could you be? You were the king. You were anointed over Shaul. You were given everything, and there's more to come. Why did you do this? Why did you steal Uriah's wife? Why did you kill him? Hey, you have his blood on your hands. He says, and so you're not going to have, you'll never escape having blood on your family's house. That's just what's going to be. Now, David then continues after this and says, Chatati. So we've learned these psukim before. And if I, in the past, I've always said the chiddush here is that what's the message? Chatati Lashem. That David hears this like indictment against him. And instead of coming up with all the answers and all the rationalizations and everything that he could have, he says, you know what? I'm sorry. Chatati Lashem. I messed up. Which is beautiful. That is a really, really, really beautiful idea that he takes ownership. But Rabbi Sachs points out a beautiful thing, saying that the chiddush here actually is critical followership. The Nasan and Navi had the ability to go and say to the king, you are wrong, and that the king could actually hear that. That tells us that there is a societal norm in the Jewish people that is just different. So I won't look at the last two sources inside, but if Judaism allows for the criticism of the leader, what's even more amazing is that we're even allowed to criticize or challenge God. Avraham Avinu, Haftis Bet Tzadikim Rasha, he was willing to, he's the first that we see in Tanakh, he challenges God. And Moshe Rabbeinu challenges God multiple times. Even before he's Moshe Rabbeinu, when he's just Moshe, the Navi starting off, he's willing to challenge God. And that is really something amazing. So as Rabbi Sachs always does, he's able to put into one or two sentences something that really like sums it up. He says the following: followership is as active and demanding as leadership. One has to realize that leaders and followers don't sit on opposite sides of the table, but rather they sit on the same side with the with one guiding principle, and that is staka u'mishpat. So if a leader sees someone doing something that is not consistent with staka u'mishpat, he has to say something. And if a follower sees a leader that's not doing things that are staka u'mishpat, he finds himself in the same boat. He has to also say something to the leader. So I'll end with the following story. There was a scientist of some sort that was doing research, and he found himself in some jungle in the middle of nowhere. And he's in this jungle and he sees the most remarkable phenomenon. He sees a group of ants, thousands and thousands and thousands of ants that are all packed together in like a tight formation I'll send you a YouTube video as soon as the shiur is over. You can see like what it looks like. It's disgusting. And they're going in a circle. For 2 days straight, they're going in a circle, like at a feverish pace, until after 2 days, just about all of them drop dead of exhaustion. So he asks, what's going on? Like, what were they doing? So he says, ants are programmed. The way that instinct works with ants is that they always follow the person in front of them. And it's great when they have a mission and they know what they're doing. Army ants will be able to get from point A to point B just by following the person in front of them. But he says, what happens when the first person has no idea where they're going? So because they're programmed to follow without thinking, so they end up going in circles until they all die. Rabbi Sacks' point is that you can't always follow the person in front of you. You need to be thoughtful, and you also have to realize that if the person in front of you is not doing the right thing, then it is dangerous to follow them. And that's the idea of Hocheach Tochiach Et Amitecha, that even with people that are far greater than us, if we follow them blindly, which some religions, you know, are more, or some parts of our religion even perhaps, are more, you know, inclined to do, it is very, very, very dangerous. I'll just end with one last thought. Yesterday we went to Kestel in honor of Yom HaTzma'ut. Kestel is a fortress that's by Mivaseret that overlooks the highway. It's a really cool place. If you're in Israel, you know, I highly recommend checking it out. So
is the tanks place?
No, so that's I love that place also. That's Latrun. It's really it's two sides of the same road. The road started at Latrun. Israel was not able to successfully take over Latrun in 1948. Kestel is basically the end of the road. Once you get past Kestel, you're free and clear to drive to Yerushalayim. So when Yerushalayim was under siege, Kestel was pretty critical. So we were talking, it was four families that were there. Three of us made Aliyah this past summer. So, you know, it's our first Yom HaZikaron, blah, blah, blah. So we were talking about what we did on Yom HaZikaron. And all the stories are really the same. That so many times, the story of the hero of Yom HaZikaron is a high-ranking officer. Israel has the highest amount of fatality in their ranking officers of any army in the world. Why? Because we believe that leadership has to jump in and take charge and be at the front of the line. But at the same, at the same token that we believe leadership has to be at the front of the line, the Israeli army also believes that it's okay, completely okay for someone who's not the top person to jump in and offer advice when planning a mission. Why? Because we don't believe the concept is, I think, rooted in the Torah notion of Hocheach Tochiach Et Amitecha. Everything we learned is that critical followership, we don't follow blindly. We work as a team, but sometimes we have to tell the people that are in charge of us that we don't see that what they're doing is correct. And one should never have upon their soul the thought that if I had told this person something, the results would have been different and would have ended better. If you see something that you don't agree with, again, to David's point, it has to be done, and like the Shita Mikubetz, it has to be done from a good place, not, stick it to my leader. But if it's coming from a good place, so lo tisa alav chet. That is the notion of the Torah of critical followership. Have a wonderful Shabbos,